To thank the sponsor of this morning's shiur. I know they sponsored the shiur for last week, but it was a little bit of an unfair delivery on my part because I wasn't here, I was sick. So Ari and Yael Shulman, I'm very grateful to them for their friendship, and they gave a very generous sponsorship. They were very excited over the fact that last week was my 1,000th shiur in the Young Israel of Woodmere. So I thank you for your participation, and whoever was involved in Lori's gift, also very nice of you. But more important than all of that is Ari and Yael's sponsorship of furthering Torah learning and Torah study in our shul. There's nothing that is more meaningful to me than that. And I appreciate very much that they feel this is a reason to celebrate. And Emir Toshem, Lahagdil Torah Ulahadira. We should have the opportunity to learn many, many more subjects and areas of Torah together and inspire and elevate ourselves. So today's shiur, because it's a standalone, because the next 2 weeks we're not going to be here, but I just thought that today's shiur, I'm going to be a little bit selfish, and I'm sorry to all of you in advance, but I have been involved in a number of very troubling episodes in the last couple of hours and days that have made me feel the need to review for myself some very basic and fundamental aspects of morality, of Ben Adam L'Chavero, of Midos and the way we treat each other. Just last night, I was up a lot of the evening because somebody forged the letter in my father's signature with a stationery condemning a rabbi in Florida, whatever, a long story, but we had to take care of that. There was an infidelity going on. There is just a lot of terrible things happening and sexual abuse coming out of everywhere right now, like we get calls every single day. So I just thought for my own sanity, it was good to remind myself that we have to be moral and upstanding human beings. And although there are lots of crazy and sick people in the world, let's remind ourselves that there are lots of people who are also very straight and doing the right thing. And it's never a bad thing to remind ourselves of where we stand and how we should all be behaving. So what I'm going to talk about today, I really begin with the words of the Ramchal in the Mesilas Yesharim. The Ramchal was a great Italian Jewish Kabbalist, a great philosopher, one of the most significant Svarim Anunyani Hashkafa that we have. And the Ramchal writes in the 1700s that why is it that he wrote the Sefer Mesilas Yesharim? The Mesilas Yesharim is a beautiful Sefer, but why did we need it? Most people know how to be straight, or so he thought. So why do we need a Sefer that tells us how to be yasher, how to be straight? And the Mesilas Yesharim writes, Hachibur hazeh lo chibartiv. There are sheets, if anyone doesn't have, they're on the bima. Hachibur hazeh lo chibartiv. Lelame libnei adam es asher lo yedu. I did not write this Sefer, says the Ramchal, to teach people anything that they do not yet know. Ella, rather, lahazkiram es hayadua lahem kvar. All I'm doing is reminding them of what they all already know. Umufursam etzlam pirsam gadol. And it is very well known and obvious and absolute to everyone. Ki lo simsa bedrov devarai. If you learn through the Sefer Mesilas Yesharim, you will not find eladvarim sherov bnei adam yodim osam. You will find very obvious truths, very upstanding and ethical moral values that all of us are familiar with. And yet he says, lo mistapkim behem klal, these aren't things that we are unsure about. Ela shekafi rov persumam, because we are so familiar with these, kineged masha mitasam gluya lako, kach hahelem mehem matzi ma'od v'hashik harabah. Because we're so familiar with them, sometimes we forget that which is most familiar to us. How often do we find that the people who we have the closest relationships to, we appreciate less than the people who are further away, because we're so used to it and we take it for granted. And therefore he says it's important every so often to go back to the basics, to remind ourselves of who we are, of what we stand for, of what we're about, and what we represent. And even though it should be obvious to all of us, sometimes we need to just take a few moments to remind ourselves regardless. Vitira. And here those three dots are really in place of many, 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 many paragraphs. But I'm just taking out the points that are relevant to what I wanted to talk about today. Vitira. He makes a sociological observation. Im tisbonin behove berova olam. Look around today in the world that we inhabit. Ki rov anshe hasechel hamahir v'hapikchim hacharifim. We have lots of well-educated people, very cultured. Look around and see how, you know, I love every week there's somebody who sends me something that on Twitter there's a whole discussion after Shabbos is over. Which book I read on Shabbos? Anyone have seen this? Stupidest thing ever. Why do you have to post to the whole world what book you read on Shabbos? What does that have to do with anything? Why is it anyone's business what you read on Shabbos? But every week there are people going and posting a picture of the book that they read on Shabbos. Almost never a sefer, just by the way. But it's a book that you read on Shabbos. Who knows if half of these books are allowed to be read on Shabbos? But leaving that aside, we're a very cultured people. We're very learned. We're very well educated. V'haseichel hamahir v'hapichem acharifim, very sharp minds, very greatly thinking people. Yasimu rov his bonanusam v'sichlusam. He said they put most of their thoughts and most of their contemplation when they think about something. B'dakus achachmas v'omaka iunim. So this person sends me the pictures every week. And it's people reading about the philosophy of this and the chemistry of that and always educating themselves and really understanding what's going on in the world and sociologically what's happening, and everybody wants to really be as cultured as they can be. Beautiful. Wonderful. Writes the Mesilas Yesharim. Ish ish kefi netia sichla v'cheshko hativi. Everybody has their own preferences. So some people, as he writes, appreciate science. Mechker habriya v'hateva. Some people appreciate knowing biology and science, so they're going to read all the books that they can about medicine and biology and science and understanding the human condition and all of that. It's wonderful. And then he says, Acherim, there are others who are going to put all of their thought on tchuna behandasa. Some people are appreciative of architecture and craft, and they want to understand how do you make things, how do you fix things. So, different kinds of people. Acherim lemalachos, other people want to learn how to be plumbers. So they're going to watch videos about that, and they're going to read books. Everybody has their own interests, and they're all wonderful. And he says, Acherim yikansu yosra al hakodesh. Some people are interested in learning Torah, and that's their pursuit, and that's what they spend their time focusing on. However, go to the next paragraph. With all of the culture that we have, and with all of our interest in educating ourselves, and the beautiful, sharp minds that we have, and the thinking people that we are, Ma'atim yu min amin hazeh. Seldom do we find an individual, he writes, asher yikvu iyan v'limad al adyane shleimos ha'avodah. How often on Sunday morning are people posting a picture that they read something over Shabbos that helps them perfect their own service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How often is somebody posting on Twitter on Sunday morning about, you know, I read a book about character improvement, about enriching the way that I live my life and interact with my friends, about figuring out how to enhance my relationship with my spouse and my children? How often do we see that? Writes the Mesilas Yesharim. So we want to be well-cultured and well-versed and very educated about everything else, except for the things that are the most important values in our lives. Asher yikvu iyun v'limud al anyane shlemos ha'avoda al ha'ava ve'al ha'yira al ha'dvekus. On being connected. How often do we spend time thinking about our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our connection with other people, our connection with ourselves, on having a really deep self-understanding of who we are and what we're about and what we're supposed to be doing? Al kol shar chelkei hachasidus v'lo mepnei she'ein dvarim ela ikarim etzlam. It's not because people would say that these are not important. Ki im tishalahem, if you would ask anybody, they would all answer, ki kol echad yomar, everybody would say, shezeu ikar agadol, that this is axiomatic to living life. Of course. Of course I need to have the critical aspects of my life in place. But everything's fine. I'm married, I have siblings, I have children, I have grandparents, I have parents, everything's fine, everything's wonderful. And never taking a step back to think about whether those relationships are really where they should be, whether I am ethically and morally where I should be. So yes, there's a public persona that I hold up, that everybody's looking at, that everybody sees, and God knows, and rabbis know also, what goes on in people's homes. And unfortunately, I always tell people, a lot of young guys in YU talk to me about going to the Rabbanus. You know, I love what I do, I really do, but it's challenging. I'll be honest, it's very hard. And one of the things that I tell the boys all the time is something that I find extremely challenging is people confide in you and they tell you all kinds of things about themselves and their spouses and their family and they tell you what's going on. And then they come to shul and you see them fighting over a seat. And I want to say to this person, do you remember what we spoke about last night? Do you remember what kind of person you told me that you are? And you're fighting over a seat and you're fighting over the yamid and you're making a deal about something that is so irrelevant to the bigger picture of who you are. So we uphold a public persona, and we have to keep a poker face like everything's fine and everyone's wonderful, and it's very challenging, says the Mesilas Yesharim. It's not so often that we find a person who's willing to think about character assessment and character evaluation and figuring out where I am and what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, I always think about this when I come back from Camp Simcha, when I deal with so many children who unfortunately have physical illness. And what comes to mind whenever I think about it is the Rambam in Hilchos Deos. And the Rambam writes here, if you look at number Beis, that Choli Haguf, there are many people, unfortunately, who have physical ailments, who are sick. Toamim Hamar Masok Umasok Mar. Sometimes the Rambam says that a symptom of them being unwell is that their appetite is really off base, and some things that other people very much appreciate are really nauseating to them, and other items are very exciting to them, but it's something that most other people wouldn't want to eat. So sometimes that's what a physical ailment will do to a person. B'yesh min acholim, and the Rambam writes, there are some people who are sick. Misha mis'ave v'tayv l'ma'achalo she'ena ru'in la'achila. Sometimes they have a chemical imbalance that makes them have a craving or an appetite for something that's dangerous and harmful to their health, to themselves. And yet they just can't get it out of their system. They reject conventional foods. And that's part of being sick. Unfortunately, we see that. Hakolafi Rov Hachole. Writes the Rambam, Kach b'nei Adam shenafsha seyam cholos. There are some people who have sick souls. Some people are physically sick, and other people are spiritually and emotionally contaminated. They're sick also. There's something wrong with them. They're infected. Mis'avim v'o'avim hadeos haroz. They are attracted and they are excited by everything that's wrong. They're contrarians. They're always defending the perpetrator, always standing up for the wrong side, always fighting for the wrong cause. Everything's backwards. And you ask yourself, are we living in an alternative universe? Do I live in the same world as you are? Am I looking at the same set of facts as you are? How could it be that you're supporting this? How could it be that you're defending that? How is this possible? And you ask yourself these questions. V'sonim haderach hatova. You know, I gave a shiur here 2 weeks ago on Wednesday evening. And I thought, with the whole scandal in Eretz Yisrael that was going on, I had no interest in getting into the details of what was happening because it's not my place. And I really don't, you know, I wasn't involved in anything. But I thought it was an opportunity to remind our community of what we do when difficult situations arise with sexual abuse. It's a problem. It's a major problem. And don't kid yourself. It happens in our community just like it happens anywhere else in the world. It's not a Haredi problem. It's a problem in every single community. There are sick people in the world. So I gave a shiur about what the halacha says we are supposed to do. What is the reaction of a community when this happens? How do we deal with it? Or what are we supposed to do? And I just went through the sources. I didn't say any commentary on my own. I just went through the sources very clearly to explain unequivocally what our position is. I got an email from a rabbi in Israel. He was scathing. He was furious. How can you say such a thing? How dare you? Call this guy up. I'm not afraid. So I called him up and I said, do you have a problem with what I said? Yes, I have a terrible problem with what you said. Okay, so he's explaining to me what his issue is. I said, I just have one question. Have you ever in your life sat down with a victim of abuse and heard from them with your own ears? He says, come to think of it, no. So I said, if you've never heard it with your own ears, I don't want to hear from you. I hung up. It's the end of the conversation. You can say, you can philosophize, you can theorize, you can say all the different things in the world. And I said to this person, are we looking at the same set of facts? Sit down, talk to anybody who's a victim of abuse, and then we'll discuss it. And then there's what to talk about. But sometimes, the Rambam says, people are choli hanefesh. People sometimes have physical ailments, and other times people are sick in the head. People have sick souls. There's something wrong with them. And the Rambam writes that they just defend all the wrong things, and they go after everything that's antithetical to what we believe in. When I was reading this Rambam, I was struck with the fact that, you know, there's something positive about having a physical ailment. You know what the positive aspect of that is? I mean, nobody should be sick, Rahman al-Itzlan. But when somebody is, the body reacts. The body lets you know that you need to do something about, very often, about an illness that's going on that you may not be aware of. So you'll be running a high fever. You'll have a pain in some area of your body, you'll get it checked out, and that will let you know, because of that symptom, that you have something wrong. The problem with this is, the Rambam is equating the two, and he's saying some people are sick in the head and some people are sick in their bodies, but the Rambam does not point out to us the fact that there's one major difference, that we don't get a warning when you have somebody who's really, really sick and off base. We don't know that without really getting to know the person very, very well. There is no symptom, and sometimes that person is oblivious. Very often other people are oblivious and unaware. And it just goes unnoticed because a person doesn't take time to really recognize who they are and what's really going on inside of themselves. And that's what the Mesilas Yesharim writes. Rabbeinu Bechaya, the Sefer, not Rabbeinu Bechaya on Chumash, Rabbeinu Bechaya ibn Pekuda was the author of the Sefer Chovas HaLevavos. I am freezing again. Anybody else cold? I don't know. Maybe I have to gain some weight. But Rabbeinu Bechaya writes in the Chovas HaLevavos, a week in bed, I guess. I didn't eat that much. So Rabbeinu Bechaya writes in the Sefer Chovas HaLevavos, and again, this is 1,000 years ago, but a lot of the structure of the Sefer Chovas HaLevavos is that he has imaginary conversations between the Seichel, between the intellect, and the Lev, and the heart. So they're going back and forth and having discussions with each other. What do you say? What do you feel? So he writes as follows. Amar HaSeichel. So he has this imaginative conversation. Hamidus HaMagunas Shebecha Rabus. The Seichel, the intellect, is breaking down the person and saying, you know, you have a lot of negative character traits. You have a lot of corruption inside of yourself. Abos Sharasham Ikaram Shte Midos. The more I think about it, the more I come to the conclusion that it all breaks down to two general categories. And there couldn't be anything more true than what he says. For anyone who's involved in people, for anyone who's involved in sick people sometimes, unfortunately, you'll be well aware that this is so on point. And he says, you can break down almost every issue that a person has, almost every mistake and crazy thing that they do, to these two things. Number one, achas mehen, avos, hahanos, hagufios. Sometimes we fall because we have a physical pleasure, because we need physical gratification, because we need to indulge, because we cannot get over a physical urge that we have. Number two, he says, avas hasarara v'hagadula v'hageyus v'hagavus v'hakina. So he writes that the root of so much that goes wrong in our world is either because a person cannot hold themselves back from this insatiable desire to gratify themselves, number one, or number two, he says, somebody who is arrogant and has a tremendous hubris, somebody who has a position of authority. How true are these words? And the power corrupts them to the point that they're willing to do things because they have no accountability. And writes the Chovas HaLevavos, those, in his opinion, are the two root causes of everything wrong that people do in their lives. Amar HaNefesh. So now, in this imaginary conversation, the soul responds to the intellect. Ze yiksha alai lehipar mimenu. You're right. But it's very hard to distance myself from these kinds of behaviors. Mipnei orech rigilusibo. Because this is who I am. Right? How often do we see? It's not really the person's fault for doing something wrong. This is who I am. I have voices in my head. You don't understand what it's like to have these kind of voices in my head. I just heard this from someone last week. I have voices in my head. Don't judge me. You don't understand what I'm putting up with. Yeah, I also have voices in my head telling me to do things wrong. And so do all of us have voices in our heads telling us to do things wrong. Doesn't give you a pass on life. It doesn't mean you're not accountable or responsible for anything you do because you have voices in your head. We all have voices in our heads. And writes the Chovas HaLevavos that it's true. We have habits, we have customs, we have ways of life that we've become used to. Lochein, hareini ve'eza panim yekel alai b'chazdecha. So he pleads with the intellect and he says, tell me, how can I get over something negative that's a part of who I am? Amar HaSeichel. So the Seichel responds, halo yadato, don't you know, ki hamaskil, yakol ve'enav lichros netach echa minetachav. He says, imagine you have somebody who goes, unfortunately, I was up last night with two people who were calling about end-of-life issues. One was here in the neighborhood, unfortunately, somebody whose mother is very, very sick, and they were calling with very critical decisions at the end of life. And one was a rabbi in Phoenix, Arizona, who called about somebody in his shul also. And one of the things I was telling this rabbi in Phoenix, Arizona, is an interesting discussion. Nothing to do at all with our shir, but interesting nonetheless. I have to take my mind off of serious things just to drop. So we'll go from this to less serious things. End of life, not so serious. So I'm just kidding. Could somebody go to the office and maybe ask them to turn on the heat? Is that a possibility? Thank you. So someone's going. Thank you. So Yonina knows the people in charge here. Yes. Thank you. So I was telling him that we were discussing what happens when you have a patient who refuses treatment or doesn't want treatment. So are we supposed to listen to them? or not. Very important discussion. The first question you always need to ask whenever dealing with end-of-life issues is, what did the patient want? Did they ever express, when they were healthy, what exactly they would wish for if they were in this set of circumstances? And the question that this rabbi asked me was, well, who cares what the patient wants? Don't we have to extend life? Why does it matter what the patient wanted? Now, what's interesting is, that's a very interesting question, but what's fascinating is the Magen Avraham writes in Hilchos Shabbos. Let's say you have, in Siman Shin Chaf Ches, let's say I have a patient who refuses to go to the hospital on Shabbos because they don't want to be Mechal Shabbos. Did I say something wrong? No? So they don't want to be Mechal Shabbos. You know, I'm going to stay home. I'll be fine. We'll see what happens after Shabbos. But it's a really critical situation. So the Magen Avraham says, you can't listen to that patient. You defy their wishes and you take them to the hospital. Even though they're screaming, kicking and yelling that they're not interested in being Mechal Shabbos, they don't want to go in a car, they don't want to go in the ambulance, we take them anyway. We don't have a right to listen to them. On that halacha, the Magen Avraham comments, I think it's in the name of the Radbaz, I didn't have a chance to look it up, but I think the Magen Avraham says in the name of the Radbaz, what happens if I have a patient, forget about Shabbos, a patient who the doctor says, you know, there's something wrong, we have to do an intervention. The patient says, you know, I'd rather die. I'm not interested in the intervention, it's too painful, it's not of interest. So what do? We listen to the patient or not? Does the patient have a right to say, I don't want this intervention? So Magen Avraham says, we have to think, what is the assumption that most people would want if they were in this set of circumstances? So if I have a 35-year-old person who gets an infection in their leg, and the doctor says, you know, this is spread, it's so dangerous, we're going to have to amputate the leg. So the person says, amputate a leg? You mean I'm going to have to live the rest of my life without a leg? I'm going to have to get a prosthetic and learn how to walk again and all the physical therapy and all those 2 years of all these treatments? You know, I'd rather leave it. Just let the infection spread and I'll die from it. So, do we listen to a person who says that? Magen Avraham says, no. Why? Because ask most 35-year-olds whether they would say that that is a smart choice. Most of them would say, yes, it's painful and it's terrible and it's horrific that I'm going to have to live life all over again and learn how to get around and live with a prosthetic, and all of that is horrible. But I'm 35 and I have many, many years projected in front of me of healthy life. So I would probably take a year of suffering for 50 or 60 or 70 years of happy and healthy life. So most people would probably choose that. Now what if the person's 95? So obviously that would change. Person 95 and says, at this point in my life, I'm not interested in putting up with this kind of pain, and I'm not interested in relearning how to walk and relearn how to live. I can't. It's too hard. So at that point, it's a very different conversation. So here writes the, what does that have to do with this? Good question. But here the Chavos HaLevavos writes, sorry, that imagine you say a doctor comes to a patient and says, you know, you have a terrible infection in your leg. You're new here. Sorry. This happens all the time. So you have a terrible infection in your leg, and we're going to have to amputate. And he says, let's just leave the infection. We don't do amputations. We don't believe in this. Just going to leave the infection, and whatever happens, happens. All right, so Chavos HaLevavos, you're out of your mind. What are you, crazy? The infection's going to spread. Your whole body's going to be infected. You're going to die from it. That doesn't make sense. So he says, a person who doesn't think about who they are sometimes misses the reality that they have a serious infection inside of themselves. And if it goes unnoticed, it will infect their entire personality. You ever speak to people who are just bitter people? Just always angry. They always have something negative to say. Ever met such people? I've met lots of them. Somehow they gravitate. So I've met lots of these kinds of people. And you ask yourself, like, I don't ask them, but I'm always wondering, are you ever happy? So you go home with your wife or your husband. Are you happy with them? Do you ever say a nice word to anybody? Like the person who you love most in your life, are you nice to them? Like, maybe you don't like me. It's fine. I'm the rabbi. You don't have to like me. It's okay. But do you like anybody? Are you ever nice to your children? Is this the way you treat everybody? So what happens? Here you have a person who has a negative character trait, and as a result of that, it ruins their whole life. It ruins all their relationships. It ruins all their prospects at a good job, because who wants to work with such a person? Nobody wants to be involved with such a personality. So writes the Chavos HaLevavos, instead of amputating, yes, it's hard work, and you're going to need physical therapy, and you're going to need a lot of hard work to get over this terrible midah, this horrific character trait that you were created with. And correct, You have voices in your head. You were created with it. You're right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made you have that challenge. It's true. But you have two options. Option number one is to do the amputation and to go through physical therapy and to figure out how to rehabilitate yourself and to figure out how to get over your problem, even though it's going to take a lot of hard work and a lot of time. Or option B is to leave it as is and let the infection spread and let it not only ruin your relationship with your rabbi and with the people you sit next to in shul, but with your wife and your husband and your children and your parents and everybody else. And then your job is going to be sick of you, so they're going to fire you. And everything falls apart. All because what? Because you didn't have the courage to stand up and say that I'm going to work hard at fixing the problem that I've identified. And says the Chovos HaLevavos, that unfortunately is the reality of life that we see so often. So working on ourselves is certainly something that is difficult. The way he describes it, it's an amputation. It's not simple. It's hard. But on the other hand, if we do take the time to think about ourselves just a little bit and do some self-introspection, it will enrich and enhance our lives in such a profound way and make us all much happier. Forget about making us happier. It'll make all the people around us happier. Make us better people. So the Chafetz Chaim writes an amazing comment. Look in the second side of the page where he says, "Chein efligu asvar makadosh m'shem ha'arizal." They say in the name of the Ari. V'chein b'mishali shel agra b'kama mukomas. They say it in the name of the Vilna Gaon as well. B'chiyuv limud sifrei musar b'chol yom. They were trying to advocate that people should try to read books about self-reflection, musar svar. U'befrat b'zmanenu b'avonoseinu harabin. And certainly in our generation, and the Chafetz Chaim is writing in the 1920s. Certainly a thousand times more in our generation, when with one click of a button we know how far people go, and we know what happens, and we know how destructive life can be. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, can you believe it? There are so many contrarians in our community. And unfortunately, sometimes people find them here. You don't have to go looking for them. You get an email every day from all these personalities. And it's in your face. You don't have to go looking for it. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, especially when we have all of this going on around us, how much more so we need to double down on ourselves and have a real reality check and understand, where am I? What am I doing? Am I on the right path? Am I doing the right thing? Miod miod tzrichem leizchazek b'limud ha-musar. Ki rak al yidei limud zeh yuchal kol adam leizchazek b'ma'amado shelo yismote. That's the only way to hold yourself back from collapsing. So writes the Chafetz Chaim, it's very important. V'lamaha davar domeh. Chafetz Chaim says, how do I see this? What is it similar to? The Misha Mahalach Baderach, imagine somebody's traveling. Benasa Ruach Sa'ara Gedola, and there's ferocious winds outside. Im lo yischazek la'atef heitev bebegadav. If you don't hold on to your shetel, you don't hold on to your hat, right? You don't hold on to something that you're wearing. Azai alula hasara lifshot mimenu eskal begadav ad sheyishar arum. Your clothing is going to blow away and you're going to be standing there naked, he says. Now, not literally. You're going to have something on you. But you're going to lose your clothing. Kein adamer binyanenu. Ka'es, he says, shoresh ruach sa'ara. There is a hurricane going on outside. Shakfira uminas ba'olam. Of incompatible values to what Judaism stands for. Of pritzos and arayas to the nth degree. Things that we've never imagined before. You know, people call the shilas all the time yichud, complicated yichud questions. Am I allowed to do this? Just a few weeks ago, there was a rabbi in, I forgot where, in the Midwest somewhere, sent an email. He wants to know what happens. There's somebody who comes in from Israel. He has a job here in America. And he always stayed by this couple. Every time he came in, he always stayed by this couple. Wonderful. And now, unfortunately, the husband died here in the United States. But he has to come back for business. And now it's just him and this woman. But he's been staying there for 20 years, so he wants to know, can he stay there? So obviously he can't stay there, it's yichud. So he wants to know, could he put a lock on one side of the door that the woman will lock him out of the downstairs, the upstairs, the this, the that, the whatever, I don't know. So technically, is it mutter, is it not? I don't know. It's usher, anyway. But regardless, we live in a generation, you look on the news, look what happens. Look what happens to the most upstanding people. And you're willing to take a chance? The Rambam writes, when you have a generation that is parutz be'inyan echad, the Rambam says it's always important to be balanced. Don't go to the extreme. So you shouldn't be making demonstrations and going to the extreme in this direction, and don't be too careless about things in the other direction. You have to somehow find a balance and be somewhere in the middle of the road. Now everybody thinks they're in the middle. Okay, you have to figure out really how to somehow live life in the middle, a moderate way of life. But the Rambam says if you live in a generation where something is to the extreme in one direction, then you need to go to the extreme in the other direction to somehow balance it out. When we live in a generation that is so parutz ba'arayas, that is so wild in these areas, and we speak to businessmen and women who go on conventions and go on business conferences, and we see what happens. It ruins families. It ruins so many people's lives. Look, you're going to take a chance? I was just talking to a woman in our neighborhood who goes traveling on business. She works with another man in a business that she's in, whatever, a wonderful person. And she said to me that they set up gedarim when they travel. A number of things. They set up boundaries to make sure that they never cross certain boundaries. We work together. We're not a date. We're not friends. We have a working relationship together. So yes, we're both Jewish, and we're both frum, and it's wonderful, and it's very nice, but we need to set up boundaries. One of the things she said they were always careful about in all the years that they worked together was that when they go to a hotel at night to stay wherever they may be going, they never go in the elevator together. So they come to the hotel, they check in, he goes to his room, she will wait, or she'll go first, the other one will wait for the next elevator. We don't go in the elevator together. One thing leads to the next, that leads to the next, and destroys lives, and destroys people, and we see it all the time. So we live in a generation that's parutz ba'arayas, where these things don't matter, and you're going to take a chance staying in this person's house alone when her husband just died? Are you insane? What do you think is going to happen? So he pushed back and he says, no, she's going to lock the door. I said, yeah, and when she has to do the laundry in the middle of the night because she realizes, you know, she can't sleep anyway, so may as well go downstairs and do the laundry. And when you need a midnight snack because you can't sleep because you're, you know, also up in the middle of the night, so you're opening the lock, knocking on the door. She's not going to open it in the middle of the night for you to go to the kitchen and get something to eat or drink? Really? You believe yourself? But that says the Chafetz Chaim, when you have all of this going on around us and you don't hold on to your clothing, says the Chafetz Chaim, there's a hurricane going on. I remember a couple of years ago, I sat down with Rav Asher Weiss and a family who was going through a very, very difficult time. One of their children chose a very different path than the rest of the family. And the family was trying to process it. So I asked him, I said, you're here, they need some chizuk, can you sit down with the family and talk to them? So I gave myself the liberty to sit there while he was talking. I was interested to hear what he had to say. And he starts off the conversation. I was horrified. I'm like, I cannot believe this is happening. He starts off the conversation. He says, well, you know, there's a famous American saying that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I'm like, what? Is he crazy? So I couldn't believe it. And then he says, but when there's a hurricane outside, the apple falls hundreds of miles away from the tree. And it doesn't land anywhere near the tree that it came from. And he spoke to these parents and he said, I want you to understand that we're living in a hurricane. There's a hurricane outside. And you can't blame yourselves for the way your child ended up. It has nothing to do with you. Now, that's not always true. Sometimes people are to blame. But in this situation, he was very clear with the challenge that they were dealing with. And very often that's the case. We're living through a hurricane. And sometimes apples are falling hundreds of miles away from the tree. And we have to understand that if you're living through a hurricane, you need to take precautions. You need to board up your house. The same way we would if there was a storm outside. Look at people in Florida. This is what they do. So we all need to live like that. And writes the Chafetz Chaim, if you don't do that, look what happens. Look how many marriages are destroyed. Look how many lives have been upended. All because people don't take the time to be self-reflective and just look at who they are, identify the problem, and deal with it. Go for therapy. We have so many opportunities to fix problems today. Not all of them are fixable, but if there's ever been a time when we can help ourselves, it's now. There's never been a generation like ours where we can have as much help as we can get today. You know, in the beginning of Sefer Bereishis, we read the story about Avraham Avinu and all of his travels. And there the Torah tells us that he encounters Abimelech, Melech Plishtim. And Avraham Avinu is very disappointed. And he says, immediately his response is, Rak ein yiras alokim b'makam hazeh. There's no Yiras Shamayim in this place. Now Rashi's bothered. How did Avraham Avinu know that there was no Yiras Shamayim? What was the indication that that was the case? And Rashi says, Mipnei shach sonoi bala'ir. You know, a guest comes to town. It's my first time here. Al iske achilo shtia sholem oso. The normal thing to do is you ask, you have a place to stay? Do you need something to eat? You want to know where the restaurants are? You help the person out. That's the normal thing to do. That's what you're supposed to do. Instead, heim shalu al iske ishto. First question they ask Avraham Avinu when he comes into town is, who's this woman? Wow, she's so beautiful. Where'd she come from? She's older than you. She's younger. She available. She's married. She's single. That's the first thing that's on your mind. Writes Rashi, it's an indication. If that's where your head is, it's an indication that you have no Yiras Shamayim. That's what Rashi says. So the author from Kelem asked the question. He said, I don't understand. That shows there's no Yiras Shamayim? It just shows that you're inhospitable, that you're a hostile people, that you're pretty nasty, but maybe you go to shul every day and daven. I don't know. What does that have to do with Yiras Shamayim? It means your priorities are off. It means you don't care about my well-being. It means you don't care about taking care of me. You're so self-indulgent. You're so worried about your own pleasures and your own gratification. So what does that have to do with Yiras Shamayim? Why does Avraham Avinu say in his response, Ein Yiras Elokim b'makam hazeh? I see there's no Yiras Shamayim in this place. How did he see that? What's the indication at all? And the altar from Kelem answers, you see from here that a person who's a mushchas and midos, a person who doesn't know how to have a moral and ethical, upstanding way of life, it's clear that they have no relationship with God. That's not Yiras Shamayim. And I don't care how they hold a position or who respects them or where they are in the world or how much influence they're having, it's worth nothing. A mushchas and midos, a person whose values are so off that instead of asking about how they can help take care of a person who's in town for the first time, is busy worrying about the woman that's traveling with them and that's all their focus is on, it doesn't just show that you're hostile, that you're unfriendly, that your values are sick. It shows that you have no Yiras Shamayim. It shows that there's nothing about you that's related to God at all. And that, writes the altar from Kelem, is what Avraham Avinu understood, that there's such a deficiency, there's such a lacking. They were so detached and removed from any sense of godliness in the world that this is where their heads are. Doesn't just show you that they're perverted. It shows that they have no connection and no relationship at all with godliness. Rabbi Eliyahu Lapyan writes in the Sefer Lev Eliyahu a beautiful insight where he says a very similar idea where Eliezer was charged with going to find a wife for Yitzchak Avinu. So Avraham Avinu sends Eliezer out and he asks him to find somebody that's suitable for his son. Hayan nirash v'nifchad. He was anxious, he was nervous, he was apprehensive. And he offers a tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How's he supposed to find? They didn't have shadchanim then. How's he going to find somebody that's suitable for Yitzchak Avinu? And he daven, sheyazmanos haru'i li Yitzchak. Which I think in itself is just a beautiful thing. Yeah, there were no shadchanim, so what do you do when there's no shidduch coming along? You go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not a bad idea. Yitzchak realizes, Eliezer realizes, it's not going to happen on its own. I'm not going to just bump into someone. The only way this is going to happen is if HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows it to happen. So you can't find the Shidduch? Ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't forget about him. So that's what he does. V'nasan simon bazeh. And he says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, let's figure out how we're going to know if this is really the right one. So we're all familiar that he does the She'iva Samayim. He says, if a woman's going to come and help me with the well and give me the drink, then I know that she's for Yitzchak. Kisharosh and Eskabla Tvilah. So he sees that his prayers were answered. Hine, hi Rivka, Yotzes Lishav Mayim. Vayikod Ha'ish Vayishtachol LaHashem. He's bowing, he's overwhelmed, he can't believe it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually answered his Tvilah and sent him exactly what he was looking for. Upela Gadol Yesh LeHispale. He asks, I have an amazing question. Ki afim rabba midas niflosh o gemidas chasadim derech eretz is rizas. He sees a woman who has such kindness and generosity, such compassion, and such humanity. You know, you ask someone, what are you looking for? What kind of guy do you want? What kind of girl are you looking for? Oh, I want this, I want that. I remember I once came home from a date, and my father asked me how it was, very uncharacteristically. He says, how'd it go? I said, I don't want to go out with her again. So he said, why? I said, I thought it was strange. We went out 3.5 hours, not one word of anything Jewish, nothing, not one word. Not like a shul, a yeshiva, a school you went to, a rabbi that you know, a tefillah that you davened, a kever that you ever went to in your life, nothing. Like, I find that very strange. How could it be that 3.5 hours I'm talking to someone, and you've spoken about everything else under the sun, and nothing Jewish? I just found that very unusual. How's that possible? So my father said, ah, maybe she was nervous, I don't know. So behind my back, my parents called the shadchan and said, tell the girl next time she should, you know, be a little more Jewish. Okay, talk a little more Jewish. So fine. So I didn't know. So he said, you know, it's not nice, you should go out again. So fine. So I went out again. And the next date, I had a chavrusa. And the girl is talking and learning the whole time. And I'm like, this is not for me. This is just not what I'm interested in. Whatever. It was interesting. But I just thought it was very indicative of a person that it doesn't even cross your lips to say anything about anything Jewish. It's just interesting. How can that be? I don't think I can go 5 minutes without talking about something that has to do with religion. So I'm not judging this person, but Rebbe Lapian, and she got married. She's wonderful. I hope doing great. But I don't remember. But I hope she's well. So Rabbi Lapian asks, isn't it strange? So you ask Yitzchak, what are you looking for in a spouse? I want someone who is going to have such kindness and such an understanding that if anybody's passing through town, she'll run out of the house and offer them a drink. That would just be amazing. Yitzchak, do you mind if she serves up a dessert? Does that bother you? Or that's okay? Nah, not such a big deal. You know, I'm dealing with a couple now who the father of the girl is a Christian. So it's complicated, to say the least. It's very complicated. And, you know, the parents are going crazy. The guy's in love. He's really excited. It's just complicated. A lot of dynamics there. So thinking about it, you know, I said to the parents, is she a nice girl? Oh, she's lovely. She's so nice. But Rabbi, what do you mean? Her father's a Christian. What do you mean? Is she a nice girl? So I was thinking to myself, it's a good question. Like, what matters more? So it seems, you look at Yitzchak Avinu and he doesn't seem to care. He doesn't give any qualifications, like maybe she should have an interest in religion, maybe she should despise idolatry. Like, you saw what was going on in those days. No, that didn't cross his mind, didn't enter his mind. Eliezer, when he makes the simon with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, just make sure that she's nice. Everything else doesn't matter. What do you mean everything else doesn't matter? Ask Rabbi Lapian, really? You come home with a woman who shows up with her suitcases to move into Yitzchak's house, and in each suitcase she has an idol here and an idol there and her New Testament, Old Testament, and she has all her things, and she's coming with this? Really? That's what you want? How can that be? Why is Eliezer so overwhelmed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered his tefillah? Really? Is this the right one? Plenty of nice Gentiles in the world. Plenty of them. But is that who you want to marry? So, writes Rabbi Eliezer Lapian as follows. Mikolza lamanu yisod gadol. I skipped a little bit. You see, it's about 10 lines from the bottom, right after a question mark. Mikolza lamanu yisod gadol. Right in the middle of the line. Everybody with me? Mikolza lamanu yisod gadol. From this episode, from this story of Eliezer and Yitzhak, we see something amazing, the chiddush nifla. Asher lav kol mocha savil da, that not everyone's brain can accept. It's an amazing statement. Aval kein hu ha'emes. The bottom line is, this is the truth. What is the truth? She'af ki ha'yira hi ha'ikar ba'avodas ha'adam. Although it's true that yira shamayim is the most important virtue and value in our lives, and although we need to be striving to repair and enhance our relationships with God, mikol makom, yesh lanu leida, we need to know, ki adam sheyesh bo adinus hanefesh umidas tovas, a person who is a gentle soul, a person who has a sense of humanity, a person who is generous and compassionate. Afki omed b'matzav sha'adayin lo kana ha'yira. Even though that person has not yet come to a complete understanding of what Yira Shamayim is. Avalim yagia lahakara b'chiyav Yira Shamayim yirdav acharera b'yasigena b'kal. If you're dealing with a person who is nice, who is generous, who is sensible, who is understanding, they can come to it. Somebody who is a good person has the ability to change anything. Somebody who is self-aware. It is so vile, it is so contemptible, it is so disgraceful. People who have these kinds of character traits, and those kinds of people, he says, will never be able to turn around. So, did Eliezer know that this woman believed in God? No. Did it matter? No. Why didn't it matter? Because he saw that she was a good person. If you're a good person, we can talk later about religion. The first thing that's more important than anything else is to be that good person. To be that ethical person. The Gemara Masechet Shabbos has an astounding conversation between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu. So as we know, Moshe Rabbeinu is invited up to heaven to learn with the Ribono Shel Olam. So he comes up and he's just standing there, silent. So the Ribono Shel Olam says, excuse me, Ein Shalom Be'ircha? In your community where you live, right? You live down there. Nobody says hello to each other. That's not the way it works. Amazing. Calls him out. I don't understand. You came to my house, you walk in, and you just stand there? You don't say hello? You don't thank me for inviting you? Now Moshe Rabbeinu says, I agree with you, of course. We always greet each other, and we're cordial, and we're trying to be nice. But he says, I'm in awe of you, and I didn't think it was proper for me to open my mouth in your presence until you engaged me in conversation. I didn't want to talk out of line. So Moshe Rabbeinu gives an excuse. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, Hayelecha la'azreini. You're right, but you should have given me a cue. You should have done something to let me know that you want to talk. It's amazing. So Rav Shach points out, isn't it fascinating? We tell our children the story of how Moshe Rabbeinu goes up into Har Sinai and he accepts the Torah and God teaches him. Amazing, beautiful story. And he writes, isn't it interesting that the first thing that Moshe Rabbeinu was taught when he got up to heaven is to be a mensch? The first thing he's taught is, you come to someone's house, you say hello, you act like a mensch, you treat them with respect. Before the Ribono Shel Olam taught him anything, nothing happened yet. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't even know that there was a Torah on its way. The first thing that he was taught was, this is how you treat people. This is what you do. And you give me an excuse that you're uncomfortable, you're inhibited, you're not sure if you can open your mouth. Be a mensch. I invited you to come to my house. Treat me with respect. Be nice to me. Everything else will come later. We have time to learn Torah. We have time to do other things. But the first thing is to put ourselves in check. So there's a lot more to be said. I see we're already almost out of time. A lot more to talk about. But this was an opportunity, again, a selfish opportunity for me, to just remind myself of who we are, what we're supposed to be striving for, what we should be working on, and to always remember, when we say it's so cliche, Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah, people use it in the wrong way, but it's really true. Rak Ein Yiras Elokim B'Makam Hazeh, a person who doesn't know how to have their priorities and values straight and aligned properly, is the greatest indicator that they have no Yiras Shamayim. That person is very distant from everything that God represents, from everything that God is about. So it's important every once in a while to remind ourselves of this. I know it's all very obvious to everyone, but still, nonetheless, it's a valuable opportunity for us to take some negative things and see something positive for ourselves, and instead of reading all the newsreels and watching everyone's videos and perspectives, to just take a step back and use this as an opportunity to think how we can improve and what we can do, and how we can better ourselves and thereby better our community as well.